Midrashet Torah Chesed June 8th.
So first of all, please turn to Mishpatim. That's in Shemos. That's chapter 23, Pasuk Dalet. Okay? Give a certain sense about the real purpose of mitzvahs, of the structure of mitzvahs, and what mitzvahs are supposed to achieve. So hopefully we'll get a new appreciation of the significance of mitzvahs. And I want to do that through the study of two mitzvahs that are connected to each other, which I think are very, very important. So in the first instance, I'm going to read the pasuk, and I want you to tell me what's a little bit unusual or strange about it. All right? So we're in Shemos, Chav Gimel, chapter Chav Gimel, pasuk Dalet, and it says, Kisifka, Shor O Yivcha, O Chamoro Toeh. If you should encounter, that's a pegia, you encounter the ox of your enemy or his donkey as straying, it's lost. Basically, this is talking about what you need to do when you encounter the lost object, any lost object. It's just giving us an example of these two cases, maybe because they're a little bit more challenging. You have to take care. If you find somebody's animal, you can't just walk away. Okay, in today's society, it's different. You can call up whatever it is, whoever takes care of it. But you've taken care of it. But you're talking about a situation where you don't have any of these organizations. You're the one that has to take care of it. So an animal is a more challenging phenomenon because you have to schlep it. You know, you got to take it to your house. You have to take care of it. You have to feed it and so forth until you can return it to the owner. So it says, Hashav Teshivenolo. You should return it to the owner. This is a very significant thing, by the way. And I think you should appreciate that. That is, if you go out of your way, I mean, I've been a jogger for many years, so this is, it's a problem because when you're jogging, you see things on the floor, you know, and you can't just run on. You don't want to stop. You want to keep going, but it's a lost object. And then you have to, if it's something which is identifiable, thank you. If it's something which is identifiable, if it's not identifiable, it's a different story because you assume you gave up, like even cash, for example. You find cash, you can pocket it. It's yours. Why? Why? Because you can assume that once the owner gives up hope of ever retaining it, so then it's not his anymore. And cash, who carries cash today? You don't have to, nobody uses cash, right? Do you use cash?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought plastic. I thought that plastic thing. It's a credit card? I thought that.
Dangerous.
Didn't that replace cash? Because I don't have to carry, but if you lose cash, so then you don't expect to get it back. And because you can't identify it. How are you going to identify it? But unless it's contained in something, a wallet, whatever. But if it's an object which a person can identify, so you assume you didn't give up hope. So then you have to take it, announce it, whatever it is. And then when the owner comes, you have to give it back to them. But you have to appreciate how important it is. Of course, it's an obligation that you have. But realize, as a Jew, this is something which you only owe to a fellow Jew. You're not obligated to return lost objects of a non-Jew. You can do so if you want to. It's a mitzvah to do so. It's a kid. But you don't have to. Because the Torah only every Jew should consider himself as part of one family. And the obligations you have to your family, I mean, there's certain things you do for people that are very close to you because they're special and they help you out and so forth. But you can't extend these obligations to anyone and everyone. So it's a different story when it comes to it. So you have a right. Isn't that a significant thing? You have a right that if you should lose something, you don't have to worry. You have a right that the person will find it, will take care of it, and return it to you. So that's a very, very significant type of a thing. What word is strange in this pasuk? What word? Just one word is strange in this pasuk. What would you say? Or I should say is unusual. What's that? Good. Your enemy. Why is the Torah talking about the ox of your enemy? In general, the Torah always refers to obligations, the fellow Jews of your nation. V'yahavta, what does it say? V'yahavta l're'acha. What's re'acha? Kamocha. You should love what's re'acha? Your friend. Who's the friend? Who's your friend? It doesn't mean your personal friend. I'm your friend. That's right. I'm your friend. You have to love me like you love yourself. And you just met me. Isn't that strange? It's true. Because every fellow Jew is your friend. Even if you don't like the person. I always tell people, you don't have to like a person. You have to love them. love means you have to treat them in a certain way, with respect for his dignity and so on and so forth. But again, it always refers, when the Torah is referring to your obligations to another Jew, it doesn't say enemy. It says, what if the person is your enemy? What if you can't stand the person's guts? Do you still have to love him? The answer is yes. But love doesn't mean emotional love. Love means affording him a certain type. Just the way you would want yourself to be treated, you have to afford that same treatment to every fellow Jew. Unless the person is a Russia. Well, we're not talking about that now. But the fact that you can't stand the person doesn't make a difference. Doesn't matter. That's not that you can't act by the basis on the basis of how you feel towards someone. So why over here does it mention enemy? I think these are the only. And then the next, let's take the next case. This is very fascinating. Kisira chamor so na'acha. That's from the word sone. If you should see the chamor, which is the donkey of your enemy, rovets tachas maso. What does that mean? What does it mean, rovets tachas maso? It's fallen under its load. All right, so it's talking about how the situation was in those days. People used to transport things on their animals. So sometimes you're overloaded, it falls, and it's fallen. It's fallen on under its load. And basically, you don't feel like, the Torah is really pointing out your emotion. You don't feel like helping him. You have something very important to do. You want to get on your way and so on and so forth. Okay? And you don't feel like helping him, which is fine. You don't have to feel like helping him. But what does the Torah say? Azov tazov imo. You have to join in the owner. You have to, because this poor owner, his animal has fallen. So he's got unloading. You got to unload the burden. And then you got to reload. And you got to help the guy. You have to help the guy. It's an interesting thing. But again, my question is, why does it mention enemy? I mean, so in general, Jews are not supposed to be enemies. Of course, we know that that's not necessarily true, because nobody's perfect. But why doesn't it say your friend? Okay, that's my question. That's my question. I think there's a very significant teaching over here. Interesting to note, now we'll go to the same two laws are repeated in Devarim. In Devarim. Let's find the place. Let's see. Wow. I just happened to find the place. That's in Devarim, Chav Beis. Chav Beis 22, Pasuk Aleph. The Torah, in Devarim Moshe, kind of its Mishneh Torah, he repeated many of the laws. And let's take a look at what he says over here. You all have the place? Lo sira eshor achicha, you should not see the ox of your brother. Oseo, or a sheep, nidachim, they're lost. Vishalantabayam, and hide from them. You know, you don't want to see. Yeah, sometimes you don't allow yourself to see. You don't want to see because if you see it, you're going to have a responsibility, and you don't want the responsibility. But the Torah is pointing out that emotion because you want to hide. You don't want to get involved in this situation, which is basically a big pain. So the Torah says you can't do that. Hashayf teshiv eim leachicha. You have to return it to your brother. So that's the same mitzvah. This is called what is it called? Hashavat avedah, to return. But notice over here, it's not talking about your enemy. Here it's talking about your friend. Your friend, he became your brother all of a sudden. So that's another question, that originally it says, if you should see the object of your enemy, and you have to help him, too bad. You don't like it, but you have to help him. Here it's saying that your friend. So what's the reason for that? I mean, it should have been the same. If Moshe decided to teach this law in the context of your enemy, so it should have been repeated. Here it's your friend. There's a change. Now the next, then it says, v'yimlo kor v'achicha elecha, and if he's not close to you, v'lo yidato, and you don't even know who he is, v'asafto al toch beisecha, you have to bring it to your house. So it could be it's a very significant mitzvah. You have a tremendous responsibility, v'hoya imcha, and you have to keep it and take care of it, etc. Adarosh achicha oso, until your brother. See, this was a formerly your enemy, and now he's your brother until he seeks you out. He seeks it out. Vashev osolo. And you return it to him. That's Hashavas Aveda. Then it says, V'chein tas l'chamoro. Again, it's just an example. The same thing would be for his donkey. V'chein tas l'smlaso, or his garment. V'chein tas l'chol avedas achicha. Anything that the person loses. Any lost object. Asher tov ad vimenu. Oh, mitzas. And you find it. Again, lo tuchal lezalim. You can't hide yourself from this. Because these are things that are given over to heaven. A lot of times the person pretends. I didn't see it. I didn't know. But the Torah is really addressing that emotion. The emotion in all of us is really we don't want to be bothered. And it's a hard thing. I know. It's a hard thing. You're going about your business. You have an appointment and so on and so forth. You know, you realize you don't want to be stopped and have a burden of having to take it and announce it and try and find. So there is a very strong desire to just keep going. But the Torah is telling you, you can't keep going. Can't keep going. Now, what about the next case? Take a look at Dalet. Lo sira es chamor achicha. You should not see the donkey, Oshoro, or the noflim baderach, fallen by the way. That's the case where it's carrying a load. Same case that Moshe talks about in Shemot. It's carrying a load and it's fallen under its load. You should not see the hesalam to mehem. Again, it's the same idea. And you hide yourself from it. You just want to get out of the situation because let's face it, it's a big bother. What would be a modern example of something? The second case, Hashavah Zaveh, that we all know. That's not something which was only in past times. That's in today's as well. But what would be an example of this mitzvah is called Prika Uteina. That is to remove the burden, detach the burden from the animal, and then to reload it. So you'd say, well, does that mitzvah apply today? Because it's very rarely. I mean, people don't use animals to transport things. But what would you say? Give me an example where we can apply it. We have to use the logic. Yes? A car. Yeah. I mean, if you're driving, and again, it's a fellow Jew. The obligation is to a fellow Jew. I'm sorry?
When I learned this mitzvah, there is like a huge difference between car, because there is tzar bale chaim here. That's true.
That's true. But beyond the tzar bale chaim, that's a good point, as we'll see soon, that's the Torah is concerned about inflicting pain on animals. Okay? But there's an additional point in helping the owner. Because it's even a bigger, as we'll see, that's an even bigger point, ultimately. And he's alone on the road, and he doesn't want to, he can't abandon his car or whatever it is. He's got stuff in it. It's a truck. It overturned. So the same idea would apply. Again, I keep saying that the obligation is toward the fellow Jew. With regard to a non-Jew, if you want to do it, and you could have there could be a Kiddush Hashem involved as well. I'm not telling you not to, but it's important to know where we're obligated and where we're not obligated. Okay? So you have both of these mitzvahs, but the point is I want to pose, why is it in Shemos is this mitzvah framed in terms of your enemy? If you see the animal of your enemy. Here it becomes back. The Torah is sort of going back to normal, where we refer to fellow Jews as your brother. What's the idea behind that? Anybody? What would you suggest? Why does the Torah choose? There's got to be a reason. There's got to be a reason for it. And also the transition starts off being your enemy, then it winds up being your friend. Any thoughts on the matter? I think it tells us something. I think it tells us something very, very significant about mitzvahs. About mitzvahs. Because it's a mitzvah if this person, in either case, let's say you find a lost object. So the person could be an ordinary person, it could be a friend. Or it could be someone neutral. At the same time, it could very well be someone that you really can't stand. What you would call your enemy. In either case, it's a mitzvah, right? The mitzvah doesn't change. Now let me ask you a question. Where is it a more significant mitzvah? What's a more significant mitzvah? Is there no difference? They're both the same. I could pick either one I want. Or would you say that there's a difference in terms of the greatness of the mitzvah? Not all mitzvahs that you do are equal. Every mitzvah is, of course, important. But you have to know how to recognize a mitzvah which has a special character to it. What would you say? Let's say I have two objects over here. One is my friend. I know the people. I can see their names. They whatever, the pocketbook or the backpack. And two, one I can't stand. And the other one I like. So which one are you going to go for instinctively? The one you like. Okay, but what would the Torah say? Yes? Go ahead.
You should go for what you can't stand.
Why? You can't stand the person?
Because
in fact, you feel good about the fact that they lost their object. Makes you feel good, doesn't it? Come on, let's be honest. Nothing wrong with that. Because when you can't stand someone and then something bad happens to that person inwardly, there's a certain rejoicing. That's an instinctive reaction. Of course, I mean, you should work on that reaction, but that's human nature. We're all human. Go ahead, explain.
Because then you're overcoming something.
Excellent. See, that's part of the purpose of mitzvahs. There's different kinds of mitzvahs that people do. And some people practice chesed, different kinds of chesed. Okay? Or they're always inviting people over for Shabbos, which is chesed, which is a great thing. Which is a great thing. But let's say the reason why they do it is because they just enjoy it. They're very outgoing, they're friendly, they like to have people over, they don't want to be alone. So they do a lot of that. They do a lot of the chesed. Okay? Is that as great as the person who really doesn't like company at all? Then there's people that don't enjoy this at all. Right? But they realize that there's an obligation to do it. So they, in order for them to do it, it's not in line with their emotions. In the first case, see, people will praise. People will praise, oh, this person is always there and always helping, you know. Yeah, but inwardly, maybe that's, they really get a lot of enjoyment out of it. It's a mitzvah. It's definitely, if your emotions are in line with the mitzvah, it's a mitzvah. I'm not diminishing it. But what if your emotions are not in line with the mitzvah? You don't feel like doing it. I don't feel like I want to be home. I have a book I want to read. But I saw this person in shul doesn't have a place to eat. Oh, goodness. And I know I have an obligation. And I'm fighting with myself. And I say, forget about it. I'm going to invite the person. And I'm smiling and I'm friendly. And I can't wait for the person to leave. That's a mitzvah. That's a tzaddik. That's a bigger mitzvah. Now, there's a case which illustrates this. I'll give you a hint. Kibud av v'aim. By kibud av v'aim. Anyone familiar with what I'm talking about? Yes, go ahead. No. What are you sorry? I told
you.
Not
like if your parents ask you to do something.
Yes.
And you do because they ask you, or like they ask you to wash the dishes before, or like you wash the dishes without them telling you to do so.
That's good.
Which is like,
yeah. How many mitzvahs are there with regard to respecting one's parents? How many mitzvahs are there? Well, actually, there's two. One is kavod avicha v'yesimecha. Honor your father. Respect, honor your father and your mother. There's another mitzvah. Ish imo v'aviv tira'u. Person should fear. So there's a mitzvah of honor, which is positive. You know, you bring them things and so on. And then there's fear. Fear is you don't keep in your place, you know, you don't interrupt them when they're talking and so on and so on and so forth. So this, but it's interesting, when it comes to kavod avicha, so the Mefarshim noticed when it comes to kavod, it mentions the father first. And when it comes to fear, it mentions the mother first. Okay, what, is anyone familiar with the reason? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You're more likely to have more like caring relationship with your mother and a fearing relationship with your father, so it's just around.
It switches it around, right? So which is the greater mitzvah by kavod? To give kavod to your father or to give kavod to your mother? What?
Mother.
It's a greater mitzvah to give or is it to your father? That says kavod
is
avicha.
Fear.
What then?
Kavod would be greater for the father.
Good.
Fear would be greater.
Fear. Why? Why? Because the greatness of the mitzvah is measured by the extent to which you overcome your emotion. You don't follow your natural inclination. Instead, you conform to the command of Hashem, even though it goes against your emotion. So that I believe is why the Torah is emphasizing over here when it tells about the mitzvah of taking care of the animal of your enemy. That's a tzaddik. That's a tzaddik. Because most people are very kind, very good people. This goes again. There are people that recognize that it's important. It's important to, you know, to go out of your way for people. He lost something, I'll pick it up. They have no problem with that. But they have their own innate sense. But this, when it's the person that, this person, I asked the person for a favor, he wouldn't do me a favor. And this, that, there's no reason in the world why should I go out of my way for him? That is your natural way. That's a natural way of thinking. I will go out of my way for people that are kind to me. You treat me nice, I'll treat you nice. But if you're not kind to me, why should I be kind to you? That's your natural way of thinking, right? But is that God? Is that what Hashem is commanding? See, the real greatness in mitzvot is not, again, when it's something that makes you feel good and it's in line with your emotions. As I said, it's a mitzvah. I don't want to take away from that. But the heavy lifting, when do you really build up your muscles? When you, the weight, when you're really forcing yourself, when you're going against your inclination, you're doing the extra mile, that's when you make progress. And that's the same thing with when it comes to mitzvahs. When it comes to mitzvahs, the Torah is pointing that out to you. And that's why now, why in the second instance, give me, now, so if you're going to use the example of an enemy, so why in Devarim, by Mishnah Torah, why did Moshe switch to friend? Why not be consistent? I mentioned enemy, over there he mentions friend. Can anybody come up with any kind of a thought? Come on, you're all very creative. Let's hear something.
Maybe through the process of helping someone that you hate, you learn to
love them. Wow, that's a great idea. That is to say, the Torah is teaching you something. If you do overcome your... In many of these instances, we harbor these hatreds. We don't like... And it gets completely out of control. And it creates a barrier. There are many people that you could be friends with, you would be friends with, but something bad happened, and then it creates, you know, you need an icebreaker. You can't. It's a matter of pride and so on and so forth. I can't go over to that person. And for no reason at all, you'll miss out on that friendship in life. Simply because you can't overcome that initial resistance. But let's say the Torah, I'm forced to do something for this person. In the process of doing something which is kind, when you do something which is kind, it actually will dissolve the emotions. And the other person will realize that you're a good person. And it very well, by doing a kind thing for someone that you dislike, and there's no real, we're not talking about a Russia over here. We're not talking about someone who's objectively evil. We're talking about someone that is crazy things. Most of these things, these tiffs that you get into are really ridiculous. I don't mean you, I mean the same thing with me. I'm not saying you. We're all that way for no reason at all. There was a word was said, this and that, and you got upset, and you can't get past it. It's very hard to get past that upset, and by doing so, you lose out a lot in life. Because there are people that you really could be friendly with. But for no real good reason, just because we have this emotional weakness, that's it, the relationship is over. You need an icebreaker. You need an icebreaker. The Torah is giving you the icebreaker. Do the person a favor. By doing the person a favor, you'll feel differently about the person. He's not a bad person, I'm doing him a favor. I know this many, many times myself, being a rabbi, for many years. So, you know, not every time, not every person. Sometimes people will say something which I find offensive. I can't show it because I'm a rabbi. It's not supposed to bother me. But inwardly, it's bothering me. So I made it a point that I would go over to that person, because after the davening, after saying Shabbos, if you say Shabbos and with a smile, you say it yours, then the feeling just goes away. You see? Because it's a matter of pride. You don't want to diminish your pride since he insulted me. But if you go over to the person and act as though basically there's nothing wrong, then you'll see the feeling will be gone. These are very, very important lessons. Now, I want to just add a few more points in the Rambam over here. The Rambam takes this up. And you don't need to have the text in front of you. I don't think we have enough Rambam to go around. But it's the Rambam in the laws of Rotzeach. Rotzeach is a murderer. Ushmiras HaNefesh, and guarding one's life. So he adds some interesting things. Okay, he talks about someone who encounters the animal. And he's bound. He's bound to stop and to remove the load, because there's Tzar Balei Chaim, there's pain to the animal, and then he can't just leave. Then the next step is to reload. He has to work together with this person and reload the animal, you know, have the animal stand up and so forth. Okay. Now, he brings down a very interesting question. See, because people can take advantage. People can take advantage of mitzvot. Let's say here's the case. He finds the animal of his friend is on the ground. Even let's say the owners are not there, because the pasuk says that you should work together with the owner. But let's say he just finds the animal by itself, and the owner is not there. So what's his obligation in that case? So he says it's a mitzvah to remove the load and then to reload it, okay? Because it says azov tazo, okay. And hakim tukim mikol makom. So even you might think that this, because the Torah is talking about a case where the owner is there. Let's say the owner was not there; he had to leave for whatever reason. That does not exempt you from the obligation. You're still obligated to do it. But here's the question: what would you say about this? But some Jews are very, very smart. And sometimes they know how to manipulate mitzvot for their own benefit. That's not such a nice thing. You see that in many areas where people take advantage of others. And they don't want, because the Torah gave them a certain power. I mean, you see that if you're with the so-called aguna. You're familiar with the aguna situation or crisis, whatever the term is, where there are unscrupulous men. Because a man in the Torah, a man has the power to grant a divorce. So he has to follow, if the rabbis say you're obligated to give a divorce. But sometimes the person will take advantage. Because I have the power, I can keep her from gaining her freedom. And he'll manipulate the situation. So that's basically a Russia. That's a Russia. Someone bad enough to manipulate other people, but to use the power that the Torah gave you to distort the mitzvah for that purpose is a terrible thing. So the Rambam says like this. Let's say this guy's a real shrewdie. So he says, if that's the case, why does it say emo? If I have to help him anyways. He says, because if the owner of the animal was there, let's say the owner of the animal is there, and he sits down, and he says to the guy, that he says, look, since you have a mitzvah, you have an obligation to do it, so then I'll sit down, and you go ahead and do it. In other words, he now shifts the burden to the guy who stopped. So am I still obligated? Because we learned before that if the owner is not there, I have an obligation to help. Let's say the owner is there, but he doesn't want to, you have the mitzvah. Torah says, so you go ahead and do it. Am I still obligated to do my part? So the Rambam says, no. Interesting. He says, it therefore says emo. Emo. Now, if the owner was he was an old person or he was sick and he couldn't help, he couldn't do anything, then you have the obligation to do it because it's as though he's not there. But if he's there, my obligation is to lend him assistance. But if he doesn't care, he wants to shift the burden onto me, I'm not obligated. I don't remember who, but I remember, I believe, one of the commentaries said that the same thing is true about tzedakah. That if a person, because we have an obligation to give tzedakah to the needy. What if a person says he doesn't want to work? You have an obligation to give me charity. I'm not going to work. So you give me, emo. My obligation is not to take care of you. My obligation is to give you assistance. So if you're working and you're struggling, but you need help, so then I have to give you help. But that doesn't give you the right to simply withdraw. And cast the burden onto me. No, I don't have the burden. I have an obligation to help a person. It's kind of like, God helps those who help themselves. You gotta help yourself. And then you can ask for assistance. There's one more case that I wanted to take up. Okay? This is a very interesting case. Because the Rambam, let's say you encounter two people. That is, you encounter two situations. One person with his animal and another person with the animal. So the question is, which comes first? So in other words, let's say one case is where I come into a situation, there's two people that have a problem with their animal. One, the animal is fallen under its burden. The other one, the burden has been removed, but there's an obligation to reload the animal. Which one would you say comes first? Who do I take care of first? Or if I can only take care of one, but let's assume, who would you say I have to take care of first? Which one? The what? Fallen?
The fast one.
The first one. Explain why. The animal still has the burden on it.
Yeah, because the one without, he doesn't have the burden anymore. The first one still struggling, so you could have helped the person.
Okay, I guess we're all getting, in other words, because of the pain.
Yeah.
There's greater pain involved. I guess this is similar to the thing which is called triage. Anyone familiar with that? What's triage? Go ahead.
It's when you have a lot of people who need help and you need to prioritize basically who gets either materials or time or help first, as usually done by like severity of whatever it is.
Right. So here it would be in line with that. Good. In other words, you have this all the time when, the first responders, when they come to a scene of an accident and there's more than one person that needs help. So who do you give the help to? Generally the one who's in the worst condition, the one who needs it the most. Here, I think it's similar because we're looking at it from the standpoint of the animal, the pain of the animal. So the animal is in pain because it still has its burden on top of it. The other animal is free from its burden. Oh, so now that's a responsibility to the owner. He's got a job to do. He has to reload it. So you're obligated to do that, but that would come second. Principles. Okay, now let me ask you another question. So he says, mitzvah lifrok betchila. The mitzvah is to first remove the burden because of the pain to the animal. And afterwards you reload. Then he says something very, very interesting. When do I say this, says the Rambam? If both of these people, listen carefully now, if both of these people are friends, they're both friends, or both of these people are enemies. Because we learned before that you're obligated to come to the scene and help whether the person is a friend or the person is an enemy. So in that situation, you have to determine who comes first. The one who comes first is where the animal is suffering. So relieving the suffering of the animal comes first. Okay. So let's say like this. Suppose one is a friend and one is an enemy. Then who comes first? In other words, let's say, because you said that the burden, you have to remove the burden. Let's say the one that has the burden, it's still on the animal, is the friend. And the one who doesn't have the burden but just needs to be reloaded is the enemy. Who comes first in that situation and why? Why is that? What about the pain of the animal? You have conflicting interests. Suddenly, the principle could happen to be right. So but I want to know why. We have to know why. You have a situation where the poor animal is suffering, and you have a situation where it's the other one, the animal's not suffering, but this guy is your enemy. So you have two factors. Go ahead.
Well, if you help the friendless enemy will see you and give up something, you're helping him, and be like, well, he's only helping him because he's a friend. So then...
So you don't want...
make the enemy hate
you. Oh, I see what you're saying. So you don't want to make the situation worse with the enemy. Okay, that's very interesting. Yeah. That's good. Okay, but there's room for other explanations. Yeah, go ahead.
Maybe that's where
interesting. Now, what would you say emotionally? Your natural inclination. What would be for your gut instinct to answer this question would be... The animal. Oh, the enemy? The animal. I would think so. Because the animal's in pain. But you happen to be right, and your point is correct. But the Rambam expresses it a little bit differently. And I think this really shows us what's important about a mitzvah. You know what's important about a mitzvah? The most significant thing about a mitzvah is extremely selfish. Very, very selfish. Why? Because in doing the mitzvah towards your enemy, who is gaining the most out of the mitzvah?
Yeah.
You are gaining the most. Because you're elevating yourself. You're getting rid of something which is a burden to you. You're getting rid of a hatred, which is bad for your soul. And you're improving yourself. That's an amazing... People don't look at mitzvahs that way. People think if I'm doing a mitzvah, wow, I'm making so many sacrifices. Look what I'm doing. You're not doing anything for God. You should never say that. Because there's nothing we could do for God. It's an impossibility. God has no need that we can satisfy. He has no need. So why is the purpose of the mitzvah? The mitzvah is extremely selfish. You're bettering yourself. And if you don't, keep it out of the name. And if you don't like your parents, the Rambam says, to what extent does it go? Even if your parents are bad, and they humiliate you, and they embarrass you, and they make you have no right to protest. Imagine as if it was a great king that had the power of life and death, and he insulted you, you'd be quiet, you'd accept it. That's the same thing. And it's not because you're doing it for your parents, you're doing it for Hashem. You are becoming a better person because you are conforming. You're conforming your actions not on the basis of your instincts, but on the Ratzon Hashem. You're elevating yourself to a higher level. You're being extremely selfish. I want you to understand that point. And it's good to be selfish. If you're selfish in a rational, intelligent way. See, the Rasha, the person that's greedy and mean and never does something, he's not a selfish person. Because he's not doing anything for the self. When I say selfish, I mean true selfishness. When you're learning Torah, who are you learning Torah for? Who's benefiting from the Torah? You are. You're elevated. You're expanding. You're gaining. You're learning something. When you help another individual, you're helping yourself first. You gain the most from any mitzvah. So the Rambam says over here that in a situation like that, if one of them was the sone, and one was the ohe, he says, someone you really like a lot, mitzvah liton imasone. It's a mitzvah to be towing. That is, towing is to reload with the sone, techila. Even though there's tzar balei chayim, why? Kedei lachof es yitzar hara. In order to coerce his yitzar hara, to overcome the yitzar hara. I'm going to give you in a second. That is the most significant. So we, Tzar Balei Chaim is very important. You're not supposed, but what's more important than that is the proper performance of the mitzvah, because you perfect yourself. If you perfect yourself, see, your life comes first. You want to help others? In order to help others, you got to help yourself first. And how do you help yourself? By learning what the truth is, by studying Torah, and then by implementing it in this intelligent way. Even and especially when it's contrary to how you look at things, when it's contrary to how you feel about things. Yes.
If you're doing this stuff for someone, like, for example, you ask someone to go get you something from, like, the grocery store, but then what they're making is benefiting you. So you're doing this stuff that also benefits you.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. If I'm doing something, am I doing something myself?
You're,
in other words, if I've asked you to...
Psychologically, like, you're doing it like the mitzvah for someone else. Like, you're getting, like, someone asked for, like, you to get them, like, a toilet paper roll.
Right.
And then, you know, like, in your head, like, oh, I'm going to probably use that later. Like, I'm going to benefit from the mitzvah that I just did.
Well, it's a good question. I think I get what you're saying. Does everybody understand what, anybody want to help me over here? If someone asks you to do them a favor, up to a certain point, if you might get the thing is, let's say you're going to get a benefit from it too. Yeah, but it's still, for the sake of that benefit, you wouldn't have done it on your own. So therefore, the motivation to do it is basically because I'm responding to your request. But if it's something that I would do for myself anyways, so I'm not doing any. You see what I'm saying? It would depend on the amount, so to speak, the quantitative factor. I hope everybody understands what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah? Again, so if somebody asks you to do them a favor, and it's something that you would do on your own, because you want to go to that place, whatever the reason is, or the thing that you're going to go to the grocery and buy them is something you're going to use for yourself anyway, so you're not doing it for them, so I don't really think it's much of a favor. But as I said, if it's something that even though you might gain from it, it's not sufficient that I want to do it, and basically I'm doing it because you asked me to do it, then it's a chesed. So I just wanted to, review some of these ideas. I hope that coming to the end of a, hope you all had a great, great year. And what's important is that you internalize the messages. We all need to, especially it's around Shavuos time, we all need to change, I think, to reorient ourselves towards mitzvos and how we look at mitzvos, and always seek out the real benefit of a mitzvah. And don't be ashamed. Once you recognize that it's purely for your benefit, that Hashem did not command you to do anything that's contrary to your interests and does not require that you be a selfless person, but to the contrary, to be a very selfish person in the correct way, and that you embrace the mitzvos and internalize and live your life according to the mitzvos, then you'll have ashrecha v'tov lach. And the rabbi, ashrecha means it's good for you, ashrecha, you're fortunate, and it's good for you. You're fortunate in this world, which means to say that the path of the mitzvos is a pleasant path. It eases your path and makes things better for you in this world. V'tov lach l'olam haba. And it's good for you. You inherit the world to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank the rabbi and I guess the rabbi for coming. And you should continue getting much nachas from your children, your grandchildren, your granddaughter that you've definitely had over the year. And I would, unfortunately, I didn't make it to introduce you, but I understand that you guys slept all the way up from Yerushalayim. You get here?
Yeah, we did.
Thank you very much. We actually slept all the way from Phoenix.
Yeah, from
Phoenix. Well, we definitely benefited.
Thank you. Well, the girls seem like really nice people, and it was a pleasure to interact with you. Very nice. You have a great summer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we're going to take a breather. We have some